Hello and welcome again to the Atlanta Radio Theater Company's podcast, now in its 10th year. We'd like to thank everyone who is listening to this podcast, especially those of you who are supporting us on Patreon. In the last 2 months, we've added three new supporters, Matthew, Shale, and Carrie, so thanks to all of you. Supporters like you are what keep us going, keep us creating new audio drama, and are going to help launch this podcast into something brand new and exciting in the coming year. Speaking of something brand new and exciting, we are pleased to announce that we have, or at least hope we have, a start date for the next leg of our podcasting journey. Beginning in June, Artsy's podcast will suspend publication and be replaced by the Centauri Express audio magazine. The Centauri Express will have all new audio drama produced right here at ARTC Studio and will also feature news, reviews, previews, interviews, and just plain views. If you'd like to submit any of the above to appear on the Centauri Express, check out our submission guidelines at artc.org/Centauri or contact us at podcast@artc.org. This month, we continue with our October 2012 performance of The Rats in the Walls by H.P. Lovecraft. Remember, if you like this performance, it's available for sale with improved audio quality through artc.org. And now, The Rats in the Walls, Part 2 of 4 by H.P. Lovecraft. Adapted for audio by Brad Strickland, performed live at the Academy Theater Saturday, October 6th, 2012.
I can be persuasive, Mrs. Shaw.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
I saw to it that Norris interceded on Mrs. Shaw's behalf. The shopkeepers listened to him, all right, for his family were respected landowners. In fact, I had purchased the ruins of Exham Priory from Norris's uncle at a good profit to him. That problem solved, I began to arrange my new mode of life. My cats had traveled from Boston in fine fettle, and of them all, my favorite, the solid black fellow I had named Voodoo, seemed especially pleased to meet me here in this strange place. Voodoo. I had called him that in memory of my disgraced older cousin, Randolph Delaporte, who had disappeared from my life suddenly after the Civil War ended.
Son, you made your father very angry tonight. I know you intended no harm, but you must never speak of your cousin Randolph.
But, Mama, I just asked if we would ever see him again. I thought he was coming to live with us for good since Uncle Peyton died.
No, he... Your father and your cousin cannot be friends. You're too young to understand, but there's...
I like Cousin Randolph. He used to play with me on Grandfather's plantation.
Randolph is gone, son.
Is he dead, Mama? Like Uncle Peyton and Grandfather?
Yes. Yes, son. Your cousin Randolph is dead.
I learned the truth years later. Randolph had gone among the blacks after the war and was lost to us. Years afterward, he wound up in New Orleans, the one scandal of my immediate forebears. Randolph had become a voodoo priest in a cult notorious for its decadent excesses. But unlike that unhappy relative, my comfortable old cat had no evil in him. For 5 days, he lay curled peacefully at my feet, while I pored through local records of my family, thoughtfully collected by Norris.
Meow.
Jenkins, would you please bring me the large brown leather-bound volume from the library desk?
The 17th century folio, sir?
Yes, thank you. Oh, Jenkins?
Yes, sir.
You might just bring Voodoo a saucer of cream afterward.
Cream, sir? Yes, sir.
My reading was absorbing and horrifying. I began to understand why the locals seemed to shun the Delaports and their holdings. Even before the house fell into the hands of my ancestors, the sight was uncanny. Ancient records mentioned a shrine atop the great limestone cliffs where now the house stood. There had been a standing circle of cyclopean stones coeval with Stonehenge, the site of druidic or even Cymric ceremonies. Then, the Saxon one of the Anglo-Saxon Chronicles from the year 1000 A.D.
The monks did raise a priory there atop a lofty cliff. There did they flourish, a right numerous brotherhood. But the people of Anchester, dwelling as they did in the shadow of that monastery, shunned and dreaded the priests. The monks did lay claim to a vast expanse of good cropland in the valley below, and there raised an abundance of coarse fare, turnips, and lentils, which they tended and harvested in silence. Though the times were hard, not the least charity did these monks have for their hungry neighbors. In their turn, the folk of the valley did not steal the crops raised by the monks. No need had the priory for fences, for a great fear sufficed to exclude the frightened populace.
The priory was not destroyed by the Danes, though it must have declined tremendously after the Norman conquest. What became of the monks I could not learn, but there seemed to be no impediment on the estate when, in 1261, Edward III granted the site to my ancestor Gilbert de la Pour. I found little mention of him from that year until 1307, at which time a priest preached a furious sermon against him, a fragment of which Norris had found preserved in a book of medieval curiosities.
Some there be who live on high, but whose souls are fit only for the deepest pit in hell. Some there be who prey on the people, ravening as a wolf in a sheepfold. Some there be who are cursed of God himself, whose foul sins stink in the nostrils of the Most High. Some is that such is the damnable Master of Exum, Gilbert de la Pour.
I found dark hints and veiled remarks, suggesting that the family had somehow been tainted by occupying Exum Priory. There was some sort of inner cult or sect in the household, limited to a few in each generation, and presided over by the head of the family. The cult kept alive ancient, forbidden practices. I found mention of one Lady Margaret Trevor of Cornwall, wife of the second son of the fifth Baron. If an old ballad were true, she had been seen on a night of the full moon, naked, her arms streaked with the blood of her victims. The presiding priestess at an eldritch and hideous sacrifice atop the cliff.
Magna Mater!
Magna Mater!
Magna Mater!
Magna Mater!
Atis!
Atis!
Dia ad Argus ad Aldan!
Dia ad Argus ad Aldan!
Tonas!
Tonas!
Tola Sort!
Tola Sort!
Argus Lerza!
Argus Lerza!
Magna Mater! Atis!
Great
Dia
Mother! Great Mother! Divine Atis! Hierarchy! Dark Mother!
Sa.
Holy Mother! Drink the blood we spill, Mother!
But these ballads were the stuff of boogie tales and legendary. Though, come to that, real history was scarcely kinder to my race. There was the case of Lady Mary de la Pour, who married the Earl of Shrewsfield in 1520. 3 weeks following the wedding, the Earl and his mother most brutally murdered Lady Mary. Both of the slayers were absolved and blessed by the priest to whom they'd confessed, and they had a most curious trial.
My lord and my lady, your guilt is most clearly evident. However, the House of Lords would be remiss should we fail to note that the victim's death had been amply deserved by her most vile and unnatural appetites. We therefore commute all punishment for your deed and further order that the records of this trial be burnt.
And, save for that one brief mention, the records must have been burnt, for no further details have been adduced. The story of my immediate ancestor's crime, too, was scantily recorded. The old papers told, in less than 3 sheets of narrative, how Walter Delapore murdered all 6 members of his family, was briefly imprisoned, and then went free to emigrate to Virginia late in 1610. The last event, with any connection to the Delapores, took place only 5 months after the priory was abandoned. In the old days, the valley was broken up into gardens, but these had fallen into rank growth. In the early spring of 1611, 2 shepherds from Manchester were grazing their flocks on the edge of the old gardens one moonless night.
Now then, lads, spread out, spread out. There's grass enough for all. Here, what are you about? Off with you now and get your dinner. Time for sleeping soon.
Our beasts are frightened like tonight, Davy.
Aye, Willie. 'Tis haunted pile that scares my warrant. Bad cess to the last of the Delapores. May he rot in the new world. May his family name die with him. Good riddance, says I.
Hush, Davy. Listen. What's that?
I can't hear nothing except these bleeding sheep.
Ah, oh, must have been the wind. Still, I'm going to bring them ewes closer over. I don't like them eating the weeds out of the Delapore's old gardens. Will you stay here and watch the rest of her?
All right, then. Don't be long. Oh,
no fear of that. Here, you bloody sheep. This way. Burn in, Shep.
That ain't the wind. Hey, Willie, what are you doing?
There's summit coming down the priory. Summit dark, black, dripping down the cliff like it's... Oh, God! Ah!
Ah! Here, don't try to scare us. Don't have us on, Willie. Willie, what's that sound? What's wrong? What? God save us! Help! Get them off of me! Help me!
The dying shepherd staggered into the town, bleeding, covered with 12 gnawing forms, famished rats, and a living carpet of them pursued him through the streets and spread through the village. The shepherds and 2 of the villagers were eaten alive by the starved rats. More lost their livestock, their stores of food. The rats dispersed through the whole countryside. Many thought them the source of the great plague that swept the country the following year. All believed that they had issued from the ruins of Exham Priory. Most blamed the episode on my family, seeing it as a lingering curse that Delapore's brought on the people of Manchester. I read this grim account in a crumbling folio volume on the evening of July 22nd. That night, for the first time, I was awakened from a sound sleep by the strange behavior of my favorite cat. Voodoo, what's wrong with you? Settle down. What are you after? Come in. Voodoo, be quiet.
I beg your pardon, sir, but... Aha! This cat is behaving oddly as well.
It's that confounded noise that's worked him up.
Well, it's...
Well, what do you mean, as well?
Well, it's the other cat, sir. They're howling and stalking the wainscoting. Mrs. Shaw is very upset with them. It's as if they...
They hear that scratching sound. It... By George... It's rats!
Rats, sir?
Certainly. Can't you hear it, man?
No, I'm afraid I can't.
There must be dozens of them. Hundreds. You say the other cats are acting up?
Yes, sir. In the kitchen, sir.
Hand me my dressing gown. We'll get to the bottom of this.
It began a few moments ago, sir. Mrs. Shaw came to me quite distressed.
I can't do anything with them. Get them out of my kitchen, please.
They're after the rats, Mrs. Shaw. Where are they, Voodoo? Get them. In the pantry, are they? Get them, boys.
My pantry, sir.
No rats. They're behind the walls, by God. Out of there, boys. You can't get at them there. They've gone. This is outrageous. Rats in Exham Priory?
Sir, with permission, the house is far too new to have rats.
There were hundreds of them. They were going down.
I beg your pardon, sir. Are you certain that you heard...
Of course I am. Look, Voodoo is calm again. Rats in the walls, is it? We'll do something about that. Jenkins,
tomorrow have the gardener go into Anchester and buy traps and poisons. A couple of dozen traps, 10 pounds of poison.
There are no rats in my kitchen. I couldn't hear a thing apart from these beastly... I mean, apart from the cats, sir.
Nor could I, sir.
You must both be deaf, then. The cats certainly heard them.
Yes, sir.
I won't have rats in Exham Priory. See to the traps and the poison tomorrow, Jenkins. I'm going back to bed. That will be all.
Yes, sir. Good night, sir.
I couldn't hear a thing, nor could I, sir.
Blockheads! Must have been 1,000 of the vermin. Filthy rats. I won't have them. You heard them, didn't you, Voodoo?
Meow.
Yes, so did I. Rats in the walls. We'll take care of them, won't we? But no measures that I or Voodoo could think of availed. We found the traps sprung and ratless in the morning. We put out poison, and it lay untouched. Even more maddening, none of the servants heard the sounds, or at least they said they could hear nothing. But after that first occasion on July 22nd, night after night, I heard them. The rats scurrying behind the walls. Always heading downward, downward, and soon I began to have hellish dreams.
Dia agus bastanacort, dia agus bastanacort, sibele, sibele, dia sanguina, atis, atis, magna mater, dia atis, magna mater.
Great mother, divine atis. Red Sibylle, Holy Mother, hear our plea. Drink the blood we spill for thee.
Dia agus bastanacort. Dia agus bastanacort. Sibylle, Sibylle, dia sanguina. Atis, atis, magna mater. Dia atis, magna mater. Ya, ya, shut nigger up. Dias, dias, bene, yamahotep. Ya, ya, yo, shut up. Sabagua, Sabagua, Bilia, Bilia, Fata Cthulhu, Fata Cthulhu, Fata Cthulhu!
In my dream, I saw a vast twilight grotto. Looking down as from a great height, I saw a floor knee-deep in filth, and standing in the midst of it, a white-bearded demon swineherd. He drove about with his staff a flock of flabby fungus beasts, like pigs, but not pigs. The creature's flesh was pale, white, albinoid, as though they had lived all their lives deprived of wholesome light, and their bodies quivered with piles of fat. Then, as the swineherd paused and nodded over his task, a mighty swarm of rats rained down on the stinking abyss and fell to devouring beasts and man. From a seething ocean of blood-matted gray fur and white slashing teeth, I saw the swineherd's face lifted in agony, and it was my face! No! No!
Are you quite all right, sir?
I was having a bad dream, Jenkins. What are you doing in my room?
You cried out, sir, quite loudly, several times.
What time is it?
Just past 3 in the morning, sir. Do you wish anything?
No. No, thank you, Jenkins. Good night.
Good morning, sir.
Well, at least the rats have stopped, haven't they, Voodoo?
Meow.
In the morning, I'm calling Edward Norris over. The rats always go down. By God, Voodoo, we'll do a bit of exploring. We'll find where they've been going, won't we?
You've been listening to episode number 163, The Rats in the Walls, part 2 of 4 by H.P. Lovecraft. Adapted for audio by Brad Strickland, performed live at the Academy Theater Saturday, October 6th, 2012. Featured in the cast are the voices of Dave Schrader, David Benedict, Daniel Taylor, Kelly S. Sicato, Ron N. Butler, Claire W. Kiernan, Hal Wiedemann, and J.E. Hurlburt. Also heard were the voices of Michael Jazierny, Andrew Chang, Cass Gill, Ron Zukowski, Daniel Kiernan, Cayman Bliss, Mary Marshall, and Paul Patterson. Music performed by The Ghosts Project, Paul Mercer and Davis Peterson with Alton Leonard. Live-only sound effects created by Lily with Bryce Lucician and Jake Skidmore. Audio engineering by Bob Zimmerman with Amay Harris and Kat Nowak. Recorded effects performed by William Allen Rich, soundscaping by David Benedict. The floor manager was Patty Ward. Post-production on this performance by Tim Chimes. Music for the podcast provided by The Ghosts Project, Paul Mercer and Davis Peterson with Sasha Zuba. If you'd like to join the ranks of those supporting us on Patreon, just go to patreon.com/ARTC and pledge an amount that fits in with your budget. That's patreon.com/ARTC. And you can also help us out by leaving reviews of this podcast on iTunes or wherever you found us. Or just tell us directly. We love hearing from our listeners. So send those comments or suggestions to podcast@ARTC.org. Want to be a part of the podcast? Our audiences are as important as any actor. You can find out more about how to attend our upcoming performances, as well as sign up for our free monthly newsletter at ARTC.org. And we always welcome your feedback at podcast@ARTC.org, so let us know what you think. Thank you for listening. If you enjoy the podcast, the most powerful help you can give us is to tell your friends and family about the richness and the power of the imagination. ARTC Studio Productions are available by mail order at ARTC.org or by download at audiobooks.com, audible.com, Bandcamp, iTunes, and Amazon. Join us again next month for more free audio drama. I'm your announcer, David Benedict, reminding you that there is adventure in sound. All material is copyright by its creators or the Atlanta Radio Theater Company.
ARTC.org.